Welcome to the Friends with Money podcast, brought to you by Money Magazine, creating financial freedom for Australians since 1999.
Hello and thanks for joining us for another episode of Friends with Money, Money Magazine's podcast to help you earn, save and achieve your financial goals. My name is Tom Watson, a senior journalist here at Money Magazine, and as always, it is a pleasure to be with you. Today, we are getting into a topic that is very close to my heart, procrastination. I was a massive procrastinator at school and university, always leaving things to the last moment. In fact, you could say that I honed my news writing skills, my fast news writing skills, by leaving all my essays to the very last moment. I'm clearly not alone either. Research suggests that about 1 in 5 people are chronic procrastinators, though a much larger proportion admit to being casual putter-offerers. In all seriousness, though, procrastination can obviously have significant consequences, and that's certainly true for financial procrastination. So on today's show, we are going to address financial procrastination head-on by getting into the various ways it manifests, the consequences it can have, and we'll get into some strategies to combat it. And I'm very pleased to say that joining us today to get into all of that and more is Shane Sommer, a private wealth advisor at Shadforth Financial Group. Shane, many thanks for joining us on Friends with Money. It's lovely to have you on the show.
Thank you. It's lovely to be here.
To start with, Shane, can you give us, a bit of an idea of some of the examples of financial procrastination that you commonly come across in your own work? You know, what are people putting off?
Oh, absolutely. One of the most common forms of financial procrastination I see is simply not getting started. People often say, I'll start saving when I have more money, or it'll be easier to invest when I'm earning more. But the truth is, waiting for the perfect moment rarely works because life keeps moving and so do our expenses.
That's something that I've definitely done many times before without getting into details. I guess Shane, on top of the the kind of examples, I'm also interested in the why. Like, you know, why are people delaying financial decisions? Is it because they're complicated? Is it because they're time consuming? As you mentioned, you know, is it because people are overwhelmed by choice, you know, in the financial realm? What are your thoughts?
I often use the dentist analogy here. People delay financial decisions for the same reasons they avoid the dentist. They think it's going to cost them money, it might hurt, and they'll deal with it when something goes wrong or something hurts too much and they've got no other choice. But just like dental health, financial health benefits from regular checkups. Avoiding it doesn't make the problem go away. It just makes it harder to fix down the track.
And so can you give us some more examples on those kind of things, Shane? Are we talking about, you know, checking in on things like superannuation or insurance, or what are those kind of pain points that you come across?
So sometimes dealing with your super, it's one of those things people just don't want to touch because it's a little bit, I'm not quite sure I understand it. But let's imagine you have 2 super funds and they both have income protection policies in there. So you're paying premiums for those income protection policies. But if you actually went on claim, you'd likely only be able to claim on one. And so you're consistently paying premiums when that money could have been invested elsewhere. Other times, people may have extra funds that they've looked to save, but they're saving it in the name of the higher income earner. So they're paying more tax that they don't need to. So just understanding your structures that are available to you and being open to not knowing something and actually asking the question and asking for some help.
I think that's such a big thing, right? That the kind of lack of confidence sometimes that stops people from starting in many ways. Shane, I'm also curious, do you think there's, I guess, something unique about money and finance in particular that perhaps can fuel procrastination even more?
Okay, so money is a whole conundrum to unpack of its own. For starters, it's still a taboo topic. People don't talk about it openly, not with friends, not with family, and sometimes not even with their partners. Now, there's even a Friends episode that illustrates this. The group goes out for a dinner, and when the bill comes, the wealthier friends all want to split it evenly, while others feel uncomfortable because they ordered less or less expensive items from the menu. That awkwardness is real. Our beliefs about money are often formed between the ages of 5 and 7. We absorb the behaviors and attitudes of our caregivers, things like whether money was discussed openly, whether there was stress around bills, or whether certain purchases were labeled as frivolous or too expensive. These early experiences create a blueprint of how we think and behave around money as adults. And unless we consciously examine those beliefs, they tend to stick. That's not to say that they're all bad, but we need to ask, are these beliefs serving me or are they holding me back? So take a coffee mindset. For example, we've all heard that skipping your daily coffee could save you $5 to $10 a day. But if that coffee gives you a moment of peace, a break from the chaos, and a bit of mindfulness, maybe that's money well spent. It's not just about the dollars, it's what that spend represents to you. We also see scarcity mindsets play out. Things like money doesn't grow on trees. You've got to have money to make money, but you can't take it with you. So these sayings can shape our relationship with money, often ways that fuel procrastination.
Yeah, that's so interesting. You're right. They kind of contradict each other, those last examples, and can obviously end up fueling people to do nothing at all. And I'm also glad you brought up the coffee example, Shane. I will be, cold in my grave before I give up my daily coffee. That'll be one of the last things that that gets struck off my spending list, that's for sure. Shane, let's get into some consequences then. In your experience, what kind of impact can financial procrastination have? And is this typically short-term, long-term, both? What do you tend to see?
Okay, so let's go back to our dentist analogy, because in that case, ignoring a small cavity can lead to a full root canal. So financially, the same applies. Some small issues can snowball into bigger problems. We spoke about before perhaps paying for insurance cover that you don't need or could not even claim on, or wearing tax in the higher income earner's name when we don't need to. It can also be you might miss out on some opportunities. If you're looking to maximize super contributions, in some cases, it's a use it or lose it. So you may have had an opportunity to make a concessional contribution up to a limit, but if you haven't used it and your balance caps out, you're not able to use that down the track. So there might be opportunities you're missing out on simply for not being aware of them being available. Often, sometimes we'll see people leading up to retirement and, you know, they've already handed in their resignation and then they come in and say, oh, I've got to do retirement now. It might be a little bit late. We might have missed out on some extra opportunities. We may have already settled on a property and then there might have been something we could have done in the lead up to that to reduce capital gains tax. And sometimes in an unfortunate situation, if someone's going through a divorce, if you go and see a financial advisor once you've done settlement, there may not be things we can do. But if you talk to someone throughout the process, you might be able to structure the asset split more advantageously for either partner as well.
Shane, when you're talking about missed opportunities there, it made me think about, you know, a couple of years ago before I jumped into investing for the first time, I had this money set aside. I kind of knew that I wanted to do it, but for some reason, whether it was the thought of, you know, a lack of knowledge about the markets or just a bit of cold feet about jumping in, I didn't get in, and I probably spent, you know, a good year or so before I finally kind of took the leap and invested. Is that a kind of another common thing that you come across?
Often, yes. People want to do something, but they're not sure if it's the right thing and they don't want to make a mistake. So you get analysis paralysis around, is that the right thing to do or not? And if I had a dollar for every time I sat across from a new person who'd come in to find out about financial advice, and one of the first things they say were, oh, I know I should be better at this. I fell into financial planning as a role. I wanted to be you. I wanted to be a journalist. So I studied journalism and psychology and then wound my way around to financial planning down the track. And so often when someone presents with that, you know, I wish I was better at this or I should be better than this. So, well, why? What part of your history means you should be better at XYZ? We've got to do a lot of study and a lot of research to be able to help you understand which strategies are best for you. So lean on that experience.
Mm.
I'm not a professional doctor. I'm not a lawyer. I don't know how to do a grease and oil change on my car. I go to a specialist for that. So you're walking into a realm of, we deal with this every day. And because of that taboo around money, it's sometimes hard to talk about. So it's a double-edged sword in that, oh, I wish I knew more about this, or I should be better than this. You're already beating yourself up. And then you've got to go and be vulnerable with that person and say, and this is where I'm at. Is it okay?
I think that's such a relevant point, Shane. And it teams me up perfectly to the kind of final chapter of today's episode, which I'd really love to delve into, I guess, some of the strategies that people could employ to help combat procrastination. So, you know, beyond obviously seeking financial advice and the help of an expert like yourself, Shane, what else would you kind of recommend to help people stop sitting on their hands when it comes to their finances?
So the first step is simply awareness. And often that alone is curative. So start by downloading your expenses from internet banking for the last month or the last quarter, not to budget or get stringent, but just to see where is your money going. Once you know that, ask yourself, am I okay with this? And if you are, that's great. You've done a check-in. If not, work out a way that you'd like to make a change. Beyond that, make a list of your assets, so your bank accounts, any shares, investment properties, or holdings that you have. Then ask yourself, how did I acquire this? Why did I acquire this? What is it for? This helps you understand the function that each of your assets plays in your financial life. And then ask yourself, do I know enough about this to keep navigating on my own? Do I understand how my super's invested? Why? What are some of the more probing questions once you've got that baseline understanding? And no one knows everything on the first day. So feel comfortable exploring and asking for help from the services that are around you.
Well, one of the topics that we got into before on the previous episodes of Friends with Money, Shane, is around financial psychology and kind of embedding good habits. So in terms of the things that you've just listed, is it worth people kind of checking in regularly on things like their, you know, their spending and their super and those bits and pieces to kind of make a good habit of being more aware and hopefully, you know, that leads to avoiding procrastination in the future?
Absolutely. So being more aware, if you do that on a monthly or quarterly basis, let's start with monthly so that the check-in points aren't so far apart, but start monthly and then you'll get more familiar with, oh, this was a month where I spent more on X or Y. There will be months where there's an extraordinary spend, like you need to replace a dishwasher. That's going to blow your spending for a month because you weren't counting on that. And then you'll have quarterly expenses that pop in once a quarter, funnily enough, and they will help you understand where's my funds going and then am I content with it? And if you get more familiar with it, it won't be as daunting.
Jane, this is such an important topic and an excellent one. So relevant, I think, to so many people, myself included. So it's a nice way to end there with a couple of strategies for people to take away. Many thanks for joining us today. It's been a pleasure chatting and look forward to having you back on the show in the future.
Oh, that would be my pleasure. Thank you so much.
That is it for this episode of the Friends with Money podcast. But don't forget to jump on our website, moneymag.com.au, for your daily dose of financial news. Or you can go grab yourself a copy of the latest edition of Money Magazine in all good newsagents. As always, Friends with Money will be right back in your podcast feed next week. So until then, my name is Tom Watson. Goodbye for now.
Thanks for listening to the Friends with Money podcast. For credible, independent, and easy to understand financial commentary, visit moneymag.com.au. Please remember that the views and opinions expressed in this podcast are general in nature, and further independent advice and research based on your personal circumstances should be sought before making an investment decision.